chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Tim Wentworth on the show today. Tim is the president of Express Scripts and Cigna Services. Tim, I am so thrilled to have you on today. I cannot tell you how excited that I am for this interview and for you making the time. I know you're running a multi-billion dollar company here and taking the time to be on the Something Extra podcast.
Lisa, I've been looking forward to this. It's a great break from 20 Zoom meetings a day, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I've got a ton of respect for you and the company you've built, and so this will be a great break from the action.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about. So you and I really met, you know, you would not think this, right? But look at what dancing does.
Incredible.
We met through our love for the Independence Center and Dancing with the St. Louis Stars. And Greg and I got to know you and Robin and just fell in love with you guys. So we've got a lot to talk about. But I know you guys didn't grow up in St. Louis. You grew up in Rochester, New York, right? So tell us a little bit about how you grew up.
So we did grow up in Rochester. Actually, I was in Rochester. We moved away, and then my parents split. And so my mom moved back to Rochester when I was 13 or 14. We lived with my aunt actually for a period of time there. And then fortunately, wound up going to a school with Robin, and we're high school sweethearts. We met sophomore year and started dating just at the very end of our senior year and have been together now for 42 of those years.
You know, I think maybe Robin had told me that, but do you know Greg and I were high school sweethearts?
I didn't know that.
Well, we've known each other since we were 3 and 5 and we're from Kentucky. But yeah, so we've got other things in common besides our love for dance. Tell me a little bit about your education journey, and did you love school?
So I kind of went a couple different places, right? When I was young, I remember my mom tells a story that when I was in first grade, I would walk to and from school for lunch, and I didn't go back to school, and they couldn't find me, and they finally found me sleeping under a bush. And when I was asked why, my answer at the time was because I was bored with school, and they ended up supplementing me. I was actually a pretty bright kid when I was younger. I did not bring the work effort into my high school years that would have matched my potential. And so I was kind of the above average kid in high school who teachers always thought had more in him and wasn't willing to give it. I did give a lot. I was in theater in high school. I was a lead in several plays. But as it related to academics, not a horrible, but not a distinguished background. And that led me to being very close to not going to college at all. And a teacher, and this is sort of how I define leaders in my life, is folks that went beyond what they had to do. Teacher took a paper I wrote, sent it off, and I got an unsolicited scholarship to Monroe Community College as a high school senior. And that took me on a very different path. I really wasn't thinking I would go to college. In fact, I was very close to going into the Marines, which would have been a great path. But I went to the mailbox and there was this congratulatory note that I was given an Eastman Kodak scholarship. And so I was fortunate enough to go to a community college. And I can tell you, from the moment I walked in the door of that school, I set myself to succeeding in a very different way than I had in high school. I knew I had been given a chance and I wasn't smart enough to know where it would lead me. I didn't have a plan, but I wanted to take full advantage. And I did. And I graduated from MCC. Robin went there too. In fact, she says if I wasn't going to MCC, she may not have dated me. So that was actually God intervening in a really good way. But then I went away for my second 2 years and was fortunate enough to be one out of 17 kids. I think 200 of us applied to transfer all my credits as a full junior to Cornell and finish up industrial and labor relations to start a career in human resources.
What a journey. And I know, and I want to talk about this, you and Robin are just such philanthropic people. You guys have got huge hearts, Tim. And I know that you've done a lot for Monroe Community College.
Yeah, you know, we started by giving them a piano, a Steinway piano. Robin was a music major there, and I was involved in music. And what we said at the time was we wanted the students at Monroe Community College to play on a piano that was every bit as good as those playing at the Eastman School across town. They deserve to play on a piano and sit at that piano and dream about a career from that place in their lives at that time, and that they were worthy and sufficient to deserve that. And needless to say, the we had a strong, strong bond with the school, and now we achieved a goal that I secretly held in my heart and then shared with Robin later on, and we worked toward, which is having 100 kids, 100 slots forever that will be free slots for kids or students to go to community college, because they're not all kids. They're veterans. They're homeless moms. They're, you know, when you look at the lives that a community college can change, it's not just 18-year-olds like Tim Wentworth was.
Absolutely. So then you went to Cornell, you graduated, and I think, did you start your career at PepsiCo?
I started for 3 years at in the music business at RCA Record Company.
Is that right?
Yeah. And what I was moving it out of HR into marketing. I was working on heavy metal, believe it or not, with the WWF and Vince McMahon. And I was doing all kinds of crazy stuff at age 24. And we had hired somebody out of General Foods to run marketing. And he put his arm around me. And again, this is back to definition of leadership a second time now. And he said, Tim, love what you're doing. You need to go and work for a real company and learn real discipline. You will never learn that here. And connected me in with some folks at Pepsi. And I wound up getting hired at Pepsi. And Robin and I immediately moved from New York to Dallas to take a field human resources job at PepsiCo, where I was for nearly 10 years.
Nearly 10 years. And then you went to Mary Kay, which I know Mary Kay is headquartered in Dallas as well. Still in HR.
Still in HR. Yeah, Robin and I were actually overseas. My sort of specialty at Pepsi was going into acquired businesses. So we had 8 addresses in 8 years that were different, moving different places, ending up in England, where we had acquired a large potato chip company. Frito-Lay was part of Pepsi. And then at the time that we were there, an old friend that had worked for me at a different place at Pepsi actually called me and said, we're looking for head of HR at Mary Kay. And for me, it was just the perfect opportunity to go and be part of a very special company with a very special founder and leader.
Mm-hmm. Well, after Mary Kay, you joined Medco. And our listeners may not really understand, and I know that you guys are there to drive out the waste, you know, in the pharmaceutical, the drug cost is so high now, and you guys are there to help manage that. But tell us a little bit for the listener that really doesn't, what is exactly a PBM and what do they do?
Sure. And it is complicated. When I'm at parties, people kind of glaze over if I start describing what it is when they ask me, because it's fairly arcane business. But, you know, drug pricing is a really, really complicated set of issues, right? Even the management of drugs and making sure the patient is getting what they need, taking what they need is all sort of what we try to surround. And so there's 4 pieces to it, really, if I simplify it. We help employers or health plans build pharmacy networks so that you can walk into a drugstore and get the product, and it adjudicates the right copay. It makes sure that that product is safe for you based on everything else we know, because we know if you've got 3 doctors, we're the one place where all that information comes together, because we see the prescriptions that you're filling. And so we can make sure that pharmacist has all that information when he or she are filling the prescription. The second part of what we do is we operate a mail service pharmacy. We were Amazon long before there was Amazon in pharmacy, because we do the equivalent of 300 million prescriptions a year out of our mail service pharmacies. We have 4 locations, including St. Louis. And again, once we've made sure that that drug is safe and then we can price it right, we can offer you that opportunity to get it delivered every 90 days at your house, or you have the choice in many of our programs to pick it up every 90 days at retail, those chronic medications that people take over the long term. The third big business that we're in now that's really important is what's called specialty pharmacy. It's the growth area in pharmacy, which is biologics, you know, these very high cost drugs, and now even gene therapies. We're actually the only company that handles end to end all of the new gene therapies. for us, again, it's about access, safety, and affordability. So we've made sure that we can also make sure patients that need those drugs and their babies typically, that their families don't have to go through hoops, their families don't have a big copayment. If you think about it, why would you have a copayment on a genetic cure for a baby that's got something that will otherwise cause it to not live? You know, you're not trying to incent the patient to do something different. That drug is necessary. And so we found ways to create access for patients in a way that our plans can afford. And so those are the three large sort of components to what we do. The last one being that we also do some of the same work on the medical side, making sure that tests are the right test for what the patient has. Doctors sometimes can struggle with keeping up with the science, or sometimes doctors may have the wrong incentives, and we've got to stop and make sure that they're not just prescribing a test because they happen to have a machine in their office that can do that test.
Right. Okay. Well, very good. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to kind of explain that. So Medco, you went to Medco, you were the president of Medco, and then Medco was acquired by a St. Louis grown company, Express Scripts. And you and I have talked about this. This is so funny, Tim, because Express Scripts was founded in 1986. I think Barrett Tone came in at about 1989. Greg and I founded Technology Partners in 1994. And I said, but Express Scripts has blown into this $150 billion company. We're not that. How does that happen? I mean, what an incredible story.
You know, it was fun to be part of. And, you know, when we merged Medco with Express Scripts, it was kind of the smaller company. Medco was a little bigger in most metrics than Express Scripts. But George and Barrett and the Express Scripts team had done a really good job of staying really focused on their business. We at Medco had lost a couple of large customers, and so we were a bit vulnerable. And we had been talking over the years about the value of merging with Express Scripts, because in managing pharmacy, scale matters. When we sit down with the biggest pharma companies in the world, and we represent 100 million patients and access to those patients, and those companies have competing products with other companies, they listen to us and they want to work with us to make the price right for our patients and for our payers. And so George and Barrett had done a great job of building Express Scripts. We had done a very good job of building Medco, putting the companies together, created incrementally that scale. But also, it was the final chapter for sort of the first half of the Express Scripts story, which was building by buying PBMs, rolling them in, and getting bigger and bigger. George just did an amazing job of building a company by virtue of rolling up the industry. The challenge that was now facing us is there was no more Medco to buy. We couldn't have bought one, even if one existed, because of the amount of market share that we had. And so now we had to pivot to organic growth. We had to pivot to a culture that went from how do you roll these things in and make sure you get rid of the people you don't need, which is part of what you do when you roll companies up, to now saying, no, how do we take this group of leaders and grow our business, grow our relationship with our existing clients, deepen those relationships, add clients to our book, not just buy another book of business from another PBM. And so George and the board made that pivot. And I was fortunate enough to have stayed through the Medco integration. Most of my colleagues had left. I wanted to stay. It was the first question I asked my boss at Medco when I heard about the merger was, do you think I can stay? And ultimately, George and the board concluded that the right leader to help make that organic growth pivot was me. And it was a very humbling process to go through, to be appointed into that role, and to try to then take the company forward and transform both a culture and, importantly, grow a book of business organically.
When you said that, I thought about that because I remember we've done business with Express Scripts. I remember because Greg and I started our careers at McDonnell Douglas. And I remember when Express Scripts, you know, was a baby, a lot of McDonnell Douglas people were going over to Express Scripts. And I remember when you came in, Tim, I remember the rumblings and the buzz. And people said, you know what? Tim is a people-centric person. He is a culture guy. And they said, just wait and watch, you know, and see how the culture pivots. And it was great culture anyway, but I think you brought a different element to the whole scenario. And we know that culture can make or break a company, right?
What I tell folks when I do, occasionally I'll do a strategy class for one of the schools. And I say at the end of the day, for me as a former CEO of a Fortune 25 company, there were really only two strategy elements that I thought about every day. And that was our capital structure of the company and how we were using our money, and our talent and the culture in which that talent was either thriving or not performing. Everything else is enabled by those two things. And culture for me is by far and away the one that you can have the most variable impact on as it relates to being a leader.
Very good. Well, we've got a lot more to talk about, but we need to take a quick break and we'll be back with Tim Wentworth. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to take a second and tell you about something our team at Technology Partners can do for your business. We have spent over two decades partnering with organizations and helping them solve their IT needs from a 360-degree perspective. A huge part of how we solve those needs is by developing custom applications of all shapes and sizes. If your team is looking for software and an out-of-the-box solution just isn't right, it's time to consider how we might be able to help. Go to tpi.co/custom apps and learn more about our awesome capabilities. So, Tim, I want to continue on with the story because Express Scripts, an awesome success story. But a few years ago, you guys had another little interruption in a good way. And so tell our listeners about that.
Well, we saw as Express Scripts, clearly we were succeeding. We were growing in the market, but we also saw an increasing force, as it were, around affordability in healthcare that was being solved through a more integrated approach. And you saw many of the PBMs like us moving inside of a large health plan so that they had a development partner that they could build things with and for, but they could also take to the market for others. And so we had assessed that there may be the possibility of, while we were very consistently focused on standing alone and doing a great job, that there were one or two companies that could be interesting merger partners for us. And Cigna was at the top of the list. And so David and I began discussions initially about us doing white label work for them, but it very quickly moved into, we were at the St. Louis Club on December 7th, 2017. I still remember it, when we sort of raised the bigger question of, if we put the companies together and built a world-class health services company on the back of what we had already built separately, how much the system needed it. We talked about our kids and the kind of world they were about to inherit from a healthcare cost standpoint. We talked about being able to do this differently. No one expected me to merge with Cigna, and no one expected David to merge with Express Scripts. They were thinking he was going to go a different direction in the government space. And that's what made it kind of fun for us, was we knew we were doing something that people didn't expect, but could be a real solution. And so in March, not 4 months later, we actually were able to move all the way to announcing the merger and then closing on it in December of 2018.
That is amazing that you're talking about it in December of 2017 and you close in December of 2018.
We're very proud. It showed actually the potential. You know, one of the things David and I centered on early was that cultures of the two companies was going to speed value creation because the cultures were very, very aligned. They weren't the same, but they were aligned. There were some things that were different at Express Scripts versus Cigna because of the mission. And that certainly proved to be true, which is why we were able to not only get through that process so quickly, both with the Department of Justice and the FTC, et cetera, but also with our own employees. And importantly, we had an activist investor, Carl Icahn, who people in St. Louis have a long memory about, try to disrupt this deal. And we literally were successful in having Carl withdraw his objection, I think 2 weeks after he launched, so very quickly. And importantly, Cigna shareholders saw the long-term future value of this relationship, as did Express Scripts shareholders, and overwhelmingly, 90%+ approved the merger. So it was a busy year.
Amazing. I think you guys are somewhere like Fortune 13, something like that. You know, you're definitely in the Fortune 20. For sure, right, Tim?
Yeah, and we don't even look at that as much as we look at the fact that we're able to touch now 165 million people around the world and over 120 million people here in the United States. And that responsibility that we've manufactured for ourselves is what motivates us every day to keep driving toward affordability, toward access, toward simplicity of healthcare, because right now people wouldn't use those words to describe their healthcare in a lot of cases.
That's exactly right. Well, what you're doing is very important. And speaking of, you guys have led the way with COVID. So how is COVID really affecting? What are you guys doing as an organization?
Yeah, I appreciate you calling that out. We have been really focused on recognizing that we have a responsibility as a major healthcare company to making sure that access in every sense of the word is maintained and enhanced for the patients, particularly those that think they have or do have COVID. We're the first company in America to say we are waiving testing for all COVID patients. In fact, I had the most amazing moment of my career. I was called to the White House. We were in the Oval Office with the president and the vice president and a group of CEOs from health plans. And several of them had not said they were going to pay for COVID tests first dollar in order to open up access and stimulate people who think they might be sick to go get a test, which is the most important thing you can do. And the president, with the door closed, literally asked for a show of hands who was going to pay for the testing. And you talk about pressure, and called out the fact that we had been the first company to do that. And very, very proud that we have kind of taken that position every opportunity along the way. We put in place a digital capability for our patients to actually check a COVID checker that was using artificial intelligence to take their symptoms and so forth and tell them what their next step should be. We opened up to the entire country a 800 number for if you feel depressed or concerned about sort of life in general, because we see an increasing focus on mental health and challenge through this process. And then latterly, we launched a really, really neat thing with New York Life, who we've sold a piece of our business to, but we view as a partner through that process. And we launched the Brave of Heart Fund, which is a fund for families of first responders who have passed away. So if you are a family of a nurse, a doctor, but importantly, an orderly, somebody that cleans rooms in a hospital, whether it's your mother, your father, whatever, have passed away because of COVID, we have a process to get money immediately, $15,000, but as much as $50,000 or $60,000 to that family through a very lightweight process that ensures that they can get that support they would need to sort of go on after their loved one died. It sent such a message, all these things, not only to the market, Lisa, but the most important market for those messages is our own employees, because it's really important.
Absolutely. Well, you know, COVID has been awful, but there have been some bright spots. And you and I were talking about our kids. And, you know, you said you've had dinner with one of your daughters every single night.
It's been awesome. And not only that, but she's got a guy who she's been with for 6 years, who's here with her. They're both working from our house here in New Jersey, because they otherwise would be in the city in a small apartment. And we said, why don't you come out here? We've got some extra space. You can work from here. And what's been really great is we've gotten to know him in a different way. And amazingly, and Robin doesn't even know what I'm telling you, he asked me the other night if he could marry my daughter. And so what a great moment. You know, you talk about something good coming out of something bad. And it was just so natural just to hug him and say, yeah, of course. But, you know, she's actually awesome. They're an awesome couple. And it has been just a treat, particularly because her high school and in early college years, I wasn't here as much. I was in St. Louis. We had started the Express Scripts Medco merger, and I was in St. Louis helping make that successful. And so it was a chance to kind of go back, to go forward a little bit in a really positive way.
That's so cool. You know, Tim, I want to talk about one other thing. And I had mentioned it earlier on that you and Robin are so generous. You guys have got huge, huge hearts. You do a lot together. You guys are a team. You do competitive ballroom dancing. I have to ask you this question. We were talking about you guys the other night. We were at an event with you guys last year. You said, when you step out there on that dance floor, it's the same kind of adrenaline that you would have. Was it like being a fighter jet pilot?
No, it was. There was a book written about fear. One of our assistants, Pat Means at the office, gave it to me. And the first chapter was all about how actually the most frightening thing you could do was jumping out of an airplane. And then the chapter ends, it says, except for competitive ballroom dancing, that the adrenaline levels in professional competitive ballroom dancers, not amateurs even, replicate that of a first to second dive out of an airplane. I can vouch for that.
I just love it. You're truly a team. I always say I would not be who I am without him. And hopefully he would say the same thing about me.
I'm sure he would.
But as you guys have thought about your giving, I mean, you guys have given so much. You may not have this completely defined, but I'm sure in your heart, you kind of know some pillars, or, you know, these are the things that we feel drawn to. You know, how did you guys come about being in agreement on that?
We've been very express in our conversations about that. And it's been over a longer period of time than we've been able to meaningfully give. Although, by the way, you know, I'm a big believer in the widow's mite story from the Bible, which is what is meaningful, it has very little to do with the amount and everything to do with where your heart is when you're giving it. And so we've had these conversations for a long time. We have centered very much on wanting to support things where people who are trying to do the right thing or need a help hand, and they just aren't getting a break. And we want to be there, because that's what has made our country great, is that people who pick themselves up and show the resilience and the tenacity. And not everybody starts from a place where that's a natural place or where they've been taught that. And so for us, that's been largely around education, because I do believe, even in these very, very turbulent times that we're in now, my dear friend Art McCoy from Jennings, Dr. McCoy, who's an amazing leader and superintendent, you know, you watch what's going on in Jennings and you realize that the education system can change the community. It's very hard if you don't have that. So Robin and I have been very engaged across the piece, as well in St. Louis, as you know, Independence Center, people who are wanting to be in the community, but who are struggling with mental illness and just need some extra services. You know, those folks don't need to be in a situation where they don't have the freedom and the ability to grow that they do by virtue of what the Independence Center does. Covenant House. And so Robin and I slept out together twice on the parking lot at Covenant House to raise awareness for these youth who, they didn't make bad choices. They had bad choices handed to them. In many cases, were thrown out of even suburban homes because of maybe LGBTQ issues and so forth. And so we really love to do things together. Most recently, we had dinner with Noemi and Michael Nydorf. They were wanting Robin to join the board of Opera Theater St. Louis. And, you know, we love the arts. We haven't been as involved in the arts because it's not as close to sort of what our passions are. But Opera Theater does a great job of getting out into the community. And they've produced some amazing novel things, including all African-American cast last year with Fire Shut Up in My Bones, the Charles Blow story, which is amazing. And so the dinner, we were sitting there and they were asking Robin, and essentially, Robin didn't expect this. I said, how about if both of us join the board? Because Michael and Noemi are both on the board at OTSL. And Noemi just loved that. Robin got tears in her eyes because we hadn't talked about it, but it's aligned with who we are. And more importantly, again, we love to be very, very intentional when it comes to how we spend our time and our money.
Right. And Tim, you and I have talked about it. It's not like you came from a lot. You remember where you came from. You have been incredibly blessed. But it reminds me of the scripture that says, to whom much is given, much is required too. You know, we have a personal responsibility to give a hand up to those who need it. So, okay, so that brings us to something extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Well, you know, I knew you were going to ask the question, and I debated integrity, gratitude. Gratitude is a big one, by the way. Empathy, commitment. And I ultimately, because of the time we're in, I think, have been spending a lot of time talking with my leaders about vulnerability. And by the way, not showing vulnerability, because that's an act. Being vulnerable. Truly being open, truly being willing to recognize you don't know everything. You know, when we talk about diversity and inclusion at Express Scripts, Susan Stith and I talk about courageous conversations. It's courageous not because you're going to say something that you think somebody else might like. It's courageous because you have to be open enough to admit you may not have all the answers and you may have some blind spot beliefs or assumptions that you have not explored. And if you don't internally become truly a vulnerable person, someone who at your core believes there's always more to learn, you will not be as effective of a leader and people will see it. The flip side is people are massively empowered when they see a vulnerable leader because that vulnerability says, I don't have all the answers. Please come in and help me. I remember being given the advice, you know, go into a room and close the door and figure things out. And my answer back was, no, I'm going to go into the room and open the door so as many people as possible can come in and help me. And asking for help is a very hard thing to do as a leader. But in the times we're in now, between the pandemic, a major recession, the whole issues around systemic racism and the George Floyd killing and the conversation that's emerging from that, all require us to recognize, wow, there is still more to the story. There's still more work I need to do as a leader on both myself, as well as creating an environment where people can come and feel safe to potentially not even all agree. It's okay to not agree, but boy, that requires a lot of vulnerability. So for me, that's the something extra that I think is a turbocharger right now is being vulnerable. You will show it naturally if you are vulnerable, but if you're just trying to show it, but you're not really open, people will sense that and actually you won't nearly achieve as much as a leader as you could.
Yeah, very good. Love all of that. We could probably spend a whole podcast just talking about that. So Tim, is there anything that's coming up or, you know, an organization? Of course, you've already talked about Opera Theater. We've talked about the Independence Center. Is there anything that you want our listeners to know about? And if so, how can they get involved?
Yeah, I tell you what, it's very hard for me to pick one because we're so passionate about so many things in that zone. But I'm going to point out one right now because I think they're trying to do a great job and they are a great asset for our community. And that is St. Louis Community College. You know, Robin just joined the foundation board there, which is great because that means there are scholarships for students with need. We actually connected STSCC with Covenant House, just helped get a million plus grant to create a bridge between St. Louis Community Community College and Covenant House for those youth to actually move into career training programs. And so it's really exciting to me to see that link. But St. Louis Community College, everybody in the community can try one for free this summer, whether that's job training or something just to help enhance their mind at a time when they're stuck at home. You know, when you look at the long term, St. Louis is going to roar back post-COVID. And as an employer in St. Louis, and you are as well, we need folks to be trained and ready to go. What I love about St. Louis Community College is it's accessible both physically and spiritually to the African-American community as well as the non-African-American community. I would want every listener to point people who are looking for some answers to the community college, because there are so many pathways that folks can access there. And there's never been a more important time for people to keep growing and developing rather than sit still and wait for this virus that could take another year or two before we're comfortable enough to fully be back to normal.
Right. Yeah, that is a great point, because I have said, think of it as a gift. This is a time to prepare maybe that next thing. So don't just sit around doing nothing. Take that opportunity to get better, to grow as a person. Good advice. And Tim, this has just been so much fun. I have just so loved this interview with you. And thank you for making the time, and many, many blessings to you and Robin as you continue to make a difference in the world.
Well, to you, Greg, and your family as well. Obviously, I was honored to be asked to be on this. I know some of the folks have been on this before. So I'm looking up at some very tall giants as I sit here and talk to you today. And I really appreciate, you know, joining the crew of folks that have had the privilege of talking with you, Lisa.
Very good.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.